Dear Plugged In. You in on this? Toyota's versatile SUVs roll up their sleeves and take on tough jobs, dress up for a night out, or haul your family and friends with their spacious interiors. And they're available with some real sweet tech. Want a hybrid SUV? Oh yeah, they got those too. All with a slew of standard features so you won't break the bank. Get the juice at Toyota.com, folks.
Visit your Front Range Toyota stores today. Toyota, let's go places.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to the 86th episode of the most critically acclaimed Nuggets podcast among those hosted from my living room. Welcome to the DNVR Nuggets' Serbian Corner. My name is Miroslav Ćuk, and I have a pretty big announcement to make. I was teasing before that I was working for this season of the show to be the most epic yet, and now I can finally say what was going on behind the closed doors of the virtual space the internet is. In exactly 7 weeks, I will finally land on the sacred land of Colorado and spend the first week of this year's playoffs with guys and gals of the best community I was ever a part of. You can expect some vlogs from my visit and also live shows that will include me in various degrees of alcohol intoxication. Since this adventure is pretty expensive, I would appreciate support from our little but very loyal group in the form of super chats that would add fuel to the fire this pilgrimage will be. It's been 9 years since this guy joined the best fan group in the known universe, and 4 years of my big giant head speaking into the void about the Nikola Jokic era, Nuggets. Now it is finally time to close the circle for me to shake as many hands of great people I've met along the way, and those whose faces I am yet to meet. Okay, that was emotional. It's time for some basketball talk. The week started with the Phoenix Suns coming to town. A well-rested Nuggets showed up with different levels of engagement from player to player. The Suns applied a very smart formula of Grayson Allen hitting his first 8 threes. Kevin Durant was shooting a lot and hitting some of his shots, but what caused a huge second quarter slump that turned into from 7-point lead to 15 points deficit was Nikola Jokic looking like he watched an NBA game from Central European time zone the previous night. He was very sloppy with the ball and his connection with Jamal Murray was non-existent throughout the game. And yet, it was the Suns on the other side and everybody has a good shot of winning against them when the fourth quarter comes. The guest team played horribly in the fourth, but the Nuggets, and I have to mention Michael Porter here, missed a bunch of wide open shots to completely take the game. Kevin Durant finally started hitting shots late in the fourth, so it was a tight game 25 seconds before the end. Jamal was running the clock, but then slipped and let Bradley Beal make the last foul they had to give. 4 seconds left. They played an action for Jokic to take a runner from the left side, but it didn't go in. Overtime, and now Kevin Durant was hitting everything. The Nuggets played sloppy still, and it was a 10-point loss. Again, not angry for a regular season loss on a random March night, but the Suns were really asking for it, and yet they stayed on top. What better way to get rid of bad taste from your mouth than some rakia? What better way to get rid of bad tastes from your mouth than to host the best regular season team so far and kick their ass while hitting only 4 three-point shots? Yes, Nikola was ready, another 30-point triple-double. Jamal was hitting tough shots, helping the bench minutes to stay positive. Peyton Watson was excellent on defense and very useful on offense. But the true star for me was the lurk. Aaron Gordon was lurking, staying ready to dunk the ball, whether it was a reverse slam after Jamal's lob or off the backboard dunk after a missed shot cleaning up with the explosion after Jokic takes the whole defense on his back, or a trademark door slam dunk in one of the last few possessions. I love you, Aaron. Oh, and Jaylen Brown was great, and Tatum was nowhere to be found. A tough look for him. Finally, last night, the Utah Jazz without Lauri Markkanen came to town, and the game went exactly like somebody that doesn't know what a trap game is would expect. A total blowout, 30 points lead at the half, the Jazz cutting it down to 15, only because Nuggets' intensity got lower and several wide open shots in a row didn't fall in. Jamal was out of this world with a metric ton of crazy difficult shots that hit only the bottom of the net. Everybody else were the good versions of themselves, with special accent on the young roommates Christian and Peyton. First one hit everything he tried, and then the second one showed some really nice finishing in a couple of possessions. Easy win, 8 in the last 9 games. La vita è bella. Okay, that's enough ISO from me. I'm not Jason Tatum in the last 2 minutes of a close game, for crying out loud. So my guest for today is one of my favorite sports writers, period. You can read his columns every weekend on thednvr.com, where he writes about all the Colorado teams. He is also an a cappella singer and a former trombonist, but most importantly, a very swell and supportive dude, Mike Olson. Welcome back to the show, Mike.
Never going to live down that trombone thing, darn it. But hey, Miro, it's good to see you.
You shouldn't have told me that. I mean, that's such a wonderful detail.
I finally figured out what I love about the format of this show. It's kind of like the Tonight Show. You come out and you do a monologue. And before we actually do sort of this sit down and chat, I love that part of that.
Thank you.
Funny stuff there. Congratulations. Glad to hear you're coming our way. That's exciting.
Yes. So it is. It's super exciting to me. And the elephant is out in the open. No, wait. The elephant should be in the room. The news are out in the open. I don't know what's the phrase. I'm
perfect.
Coming
exactly.
to Denver in 7 weeks. I'll be there for 8 days and hopefully see 2 playoff games live. What else should I see and do? And remember, it will be my first time traveling outside of Europe.
I'm going to assume, but let me make sure here. It's just you, not you and the family?
Yes, it's just me, yeah.
So when you go out and do something there locally that's just you, what are your sorts of things around you, Miro? Do you get out to nature? Do you get out to the clubs? Do you go to sports?
I don't go to clubs because I'm old and everything is noisy to me. So yeah, I like going to the nature. I like playing basketball. This is what I do every week for several years now. So yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of a quiet guy, but on the other hand, I'm guessing there will not be a lot of quiet around me in, you know, 7 playoff days that's coming up in April.
You like some quiet around you. Down around downtown, the Denver Art Museum is not only a beautiful and quiet space that has some incredible stuff in and around it, but the main arm of the Denver Library is right next to it, and that all sits right off of places like all of the downtown complex for 16th Street Mall, and a couple of beautiful parks there right next to all of the government structure. That's a beautiful part of town, over by City Park. And you'll be here the right time of year for stuff like this, over by City Park, massive lake. That's where, the zoo and the museum is. Actually all of that complex is not particularly far from the DNVR bar. I have walked from City Park over to the DNVR bar, once or twice, and that's only about a mile plus maybe. So that's really beautiful. You're going to get to see plenty of basketball. That's for darn sure. How much are you going to be at the bar as well? Are you going to just go to games at the arena? Or are you going to come into the bar a bunch?
I'll probably be at the bar every night the game is not in the arena, but we'll see. I might be at the bar on one of the games as well. I have no idea. It's just too far away. right now, but the plan is to be there for at least one playoff game live, you know, and then we'll see what goes from there. So it's pretty exciting to me. By the way, to the audience, please comment in the live chat what else should I do or see. I'll read the ideas after the show, but if you want to for it to be read on the show, please use the super chat option so it is highlighted to me. I'm a boomer producing this show by myself, and it's difficult to track all the comments as they happen. And we already have the first super chat from my dear friend Patrick Rasmussen. Hell yeah, this cash is to be spent in one of the Chubby's Burrito in the Northwest Denver. Perfect drunk sponge. Yeah, that sounds really needed for me, to be honest.
Chubby's makes some awfully good food. Patrick is on the money there for sure.
Yeah, and I'm not really up to the task of drinking a lot. I actually don't drink that much in my real life, so I should be prepared with tips like this, you know, because I'm guessing there will be more alcohol involved than in my usual days.
I have a feeling there'll be some rakia at the bar anyway, so
yeah, some rakia should be at the bar. especially for the playoffs. I think that's a sound business decision.
I think that's right, for sure.
Very sound decision, especially after wins. And I'm guessing there will be about 16 of those in the playoffs. So,
yeah.
Okay, let's take one short break, and then we'll continue with the meat of today's show. And that's your favorite stories about the Nuggets this season. Don't go anywhere.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes.
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Okay, we are back. And Mike, since you're a writer and a damn good one, I decided to let you cook this weekend and pick your favorite Nugget stories from this season. I will read the titles, but make no mistake, they're all Mike's ideas and stories. So let's start off with the first one. Let me bring in the graphics. So the first story is called Joker's Rise Above the Noise. Please elaborate.
To be fair, we were each going to do four, and the only reason I threw eight at you was to make sure that I didn't overlap on your four. But I really appreciate that you just said that's a good eight, and let's do this. You're so kind. That was so nice.
I might be kind. I might also be lazy. You know. So
I liked this. This was good. I love this. I think to me, what's been amazing watching Joker this year, especially coming out of the All-Star break, because you could feel the team, and I think even him grinding down a little bit going into the break. But as he's come out of the break, year over year, there's always been a knock against him before we won this championship this last year, right? He's not a good enough defender. He, will never be able to be a primary piece without somebody big enough around him. even last year, after two MVPs in a row, you could see that that third one in a row was really grinding on him the way that conversation started to go last year. And I think every year there's been something in the conversation over the course of that season that really impacts him, that really affects him. I felt like coming out of the break, last year, he really slowed down to basically remove himself from that MVP conversation. And it feels like this year, none of that matters to him. You know, if he's MVP, if he's not MVP, I think, you know, I'm certain he wants to win that ring this year, but anything beyond that championship, I don't think any of that matters to him. And I think that all of that noise that can typically pull at somebody, I think at least for him, and I'm sure for a lot of folks who win a championship, that noise seems to be gone for him this year. He's playing with a different attitude. What for you? Does that ring for you?
Yeah, I agree with that. Actually, last year it was Kendrick Perkins that made the whole conversation so poisonous, so toxic. He actually took himself from the race, just didn't want to be a part of it. And I think that was a sound idea. And, you know, give one to another guy. It's fair. I mean, it's not as often that a guy will get three in a row while everybody is screaming that he's not the best player in the world. And we actually saw those takes like 15 days before the playoffs started. Like, people were still screaming that he's not even a top five player in the NBA. And then, we know what happened after that. And, of course, we know that the Nuggets won in the weakest playoffs in the history, like playing against the worst competition imaginable, against, you know, 6 seeds, 7 seeds, 8 seeds. Not like those teams have beaten the number 1 seeds and number 2 seeds on the way. Like,
yeah.
It is what it is. This year, I agree. This year, I just cannot imagine it becoming that toxic again. And especially, you know, when you have that certificate on your back of being an NBA champion, a dominant NBA champion, like, people are not going to go that easy and take some crazy routes to try to. By the way, Shai Gilgeous-Alexander has a wonderful season, and I think the race should be really close between him and Joker. I don't think anybody else is really that close to those two guys, and it really might come to the last game of the season to see which team will have, you know, advantage in the rankings.
Yeah.
To sway those last voters that didn't already decide who they're voting for. So it's going to be fun. I'm, of course, rooting for Nikola to get another one. It's just because of the, you know, you need the hardware to get on the Mount Rushmore, and I'm so certain he belongs on the Mount Rushmore of NBA after 75 seasons. What is 76, 77 seasons now? Yeah, I know he's not the top 75 player of all time. We elaborated that. That was so dumb.
So dumb.
After being an MVP.
but you're right. Shai's having such a beautiful season, and I wouldn't be at all surprised to see him get it. And I think it's well deserved if he does get it. I'm as biased as you are, because I'm the homer you are, but I also, you know, there's an awful lot leaning in Nikola's direction as to why I think he's very deserving of another one. And I think the part of all of this that makes me happiest is, at least for him, he doesn't care how much further up that mountain he goes. He doesn't care if his face is on that Rushmore or not. He just wants to keep playing and playing his best ball. And man, he's sure doing it. He's having an incredible year.
So, we mentioned Shai already. The NBA superstars are out of this world. Don't get me wrong. So, I put the stat the other day that Joker's 5 worst games this season had a 22.11 rebounds and 7 assists on average. Now, you can find some other players with similar numbers like Giannis or Luka, but Joker's impact on the games is so much beyond his incredible numbers. I feel this is his most dominant season so far, even though literally no numbers across the board suggest that. He's not recording a career high in any of the categories. Now, you're an all-sports guy. Was there a player out there in the last however many years you've been following various sports that impacted his team as much as Joker does on a nightly basis these last few seasons?
I was also lucky enough as a kid growing up out in LA to just happen to catch on to the front end of the Magic era, basically. And he's still, he's the guy I end up comparing the most to Joker because of the way the teams play with them on and off the floor. The on-off numbers for those guys, the ability to levitate everyone else around them, raise their game to that degree. It's just something that you don't see in too many guys. LeBron is that guy. There, any other four guys on the floor are that much better because they're out there with him, you know, and that's Joker all day. Man, it's hard to think of too many. Stockton was a floor lifter. Gosh, not to that degree.
Yeah, no. Especially basketball is specific because you only have five guys on the court, so it's easier for your superstar to influence everybody else on the court than, you know, for instance, in football or, you know, however you call it, the American football.
And every other name that we compare him to now is all names that were taken in the first. I mean, there's no mysteries in any of those. You know, LeBron went high, Magic went high, Stockton went high. All of the guys that Joker now gets compared to were the very first guys drafted out of their draft, not buried somewhere down in the second round. So just amazing, just incredible.
Yeah, one day somebody will make a movie about Joker being selected as 41st pick. That's just amazing. Honestly, I actually have a rant prepared for another time because people in Serbia are always down on Joker because he has missed several years of playing for the national team, and I actually did some research on it. And Nikola has been in the NBA. This is his ninth season, so his ninth opportunity to play for the national team. Actually, that's not true because there have been 2 years with no competition. So seventh chance for him to play for the national team. And he, of course, missed some of those. But funny thing is, he was never called up for the national team before he came to the NBA. So. It's exactly the same problem happened here in Serbia, like what happened on draft night. Nobody knew how good he is. And that's actually amazing. That's my favorite part of the show. Like, he came out of nowhere.
Yeah, just out of
except for people that actually played against him and that will always tell you, no, man, you don't want to play against that guy. That guy is a beast. You know, he's like teen years and early 20s. Okay, let's get to the second story for today, and maybe the second most intriguing guy on the Nuggets this season. So it's Peyton Watson, of course. Peyton's ascension. This is how you call it. Please start on it, and I'll pick your brain along the way.
I loved the fact that at the beginning of this season, and this has been a topic across a ton of the post-game shows for the guys as we win more and more games this season. But I love the fact that nobody still knew exactly what we had in Peyton at the beginning of this year. And given what we now have in him, what we now see in him, that there's a guy who, somebody like Bill Simmons the other day when he's talking about the Nuggets, going to see the Nuggets, and he said, that is a guy that I would trust. Now, if I was the Nuggets, I would trust Peyton Watson after watching him, right? He's moved that far up that list. I would have been thrilled with 50% of what he has achieved this year, right? I'd have been so excited about what we had with Peyton that way. And I think, you know, we've been so lucky on so many fronts with so many guys that have come across in winning this championship in these last few years, and also obviously done some really incredible drafting, some really thoughtful caught some real lightning in a bottle with several of these guys, but he's not that far away from what we were just talking about with Nikola, right? As far as lightning in a bottle, he had played so little college ball, you know, and with where we drafted him, there were a lot of people scratching their heads as to that seems like a real overreach, I think, for a lot of folks, and look at him now.
Yeah, of course, drafting Peyton, drafting Christian, possibly drafting Julian Strother. We'll see how that develops in the future. But these guys are such incredible draft picks. But at the same time, we have to give flowers to the player development team on the Nuggets, because Nikola, whenever he speaks to you know, journalists in his native language, he will always mention Ogi Stojaković and the player development team, who is doing an amazing job on the Nuggets. And you know, there are a lot of teams that you will hear like, oh, those guys suck at picking talent. No, maybe they just suck at developing talent. It's completely possible. This is the reason why no high pick even hits there. So it's a big part of it. I'm really happy about it. And the season started with Calvin Booth telling Kevin O'Connor of the Ringer that he is happy Bruce Brown got the bag, but people should be careful about what they want, since Peyton is bigger, longer, a better defender, a better passer. And I actually thought he was still drunk from the parade, but Peyton definitely looks like the sixth most important Nugget today. Do you see him as the guy that plays the most total minutes off the bench in the playoffs for the Nuggets?
I think he absolutely is, and while he is longer, and while you would think of him more on those, you know, fours and fives, basically, or at least threes and fours, as he's defending, he is able to defend, you know, one through five completely. I think he is absolutely. I miss Bruce, and I think Bruce was the perfect fit for us. Peyton is still young, and Peyton, on occasion, even in this last week, you see him make some youthful errors still. But all in all, he certainly seems to have made himself almost, if not as much, a positive as Bruce was by the time we were hitting the playoffs. I tend to agree with what Simmons was saying the other day. It makes a lot of sense.
It's crazy. Like,
yeah,
you last season, you had Uncle Jeff, you had Bruce, and then you have Christian Brown here and there. Sometimes he was playing, sometimes he wasn't. And Bruce was actually the only guy you could have count on 100% and be sure that those minutes will go fine. And, you know, they still went 6-4. So this season, it kind of feels like Peyton might be that guy that's as reliable as Bruce. I don't know if that's true. We still have to see it in the playoffs, in real playoff minutes. By the way, I was browsing through Peyton's stats from this season, and because he has played a bunch of minutes at the end of last season in fake games with literally no significance, his per 36 numbers last season actually look better than this year's. No, because he's actually playing real games. But one thing I forgot, and this has nothing to do with Peyton, he appeared in three games in the Phoenix series, and all of those 9 minutes were garbage time, of course. It was three blowout wins. I just wanted to remind ourselves of how that series actually went. Yeah, it wasn't close at all.
He, you know, even though he was coming in, he came in for a few important minutes there. I seem to remember him guarding Durant on a few plays that, and that's his hero, right? So I remember them chatting on the court even. So, but to that end, still that many minutes in his rookie season, that few minutes in his rookie season, that few contributions still able to make in the playoffs. He's a very different guy for us coming into the end of this year, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. I feel fine. And the stories we'll talk about, in next segments, will explain why I'm still fine in the West, as Ja Morant would say. We'll take a short break. Don't go anywhere. Okay. Next story. MPJ's lack of flowers or demands. Now, this is an intriguing title. Please expand.
I am so impressed with Mike from the guy who came in the doors here, basically, who walked in basically with a bit of an attitude of, you know, gosh, it's nice that they've got that MVP here to back me up, as it were. And some of the early thinking by Mike around, you know, I should be getting the ball more. I should, right? You just don't hear a lot of that language from Mike anymore, and you don't see as many negative games from him, whether you're thinking about it in terms of plus minus or a little more advanced stats. You don't, even in the games that he's not pouring the ball in the way he can and has been recently, he still is getting you a bunch of boards. He still is getting you blocks and steals, and he's not a defensive negative. People are not prone to trying to exploit him on that end of the court any longer. And in the midst of all of that, as he has gotten to be a more complete player, a better player, a guy who we couldn't do this without, he has not gone back to that attitude of, look at me, hey, what about me? You know, he's very much, I think, taken on the attitude not only of the team, but of Joker as the leader. I think he sees things a lot differently now, and he's a much more mature person. He's just a much more mature human being, and I think that shines through in a lot of great ways, not only for the team, but for him.
Yeah, the only knock ever really on Mike on the Nuggets was the size of his contract. And I really miss the days when we were less informed as fans, because I was a witness of Jordan's six championships. I had no idea that Scottie Pippen was playing for like $2 million per year in all of those championships. I had no idea. And I didn't care. I mean, it's just, you know, this is the bunch around Michael and they're winning championships. Now, if you wouldn't know the size of contracts of all of the guys, everybody would love the Mike as the third or fourth best player on the team, and nobody would have anything to say against him. But, you know, it is what it is. We know too much. The starting five without Mike simply isn't incredible on either of the sides of the court. You can sub in Peyton for Mike and stay great or even better on defense, but now your spacing is worse. Same with Christian Brown. There's just not a lot of guys in the whole NBA that can be as long as and engaged on defense and as deadly from outside and tenacious on the glass. So contract be damned. I just pray we get as many healthy seasons from Mike as possible. By the way, Mike this season already played the most games in a single season in his career. So there's still like, 18 games to the end, and he already surpassed his threshold. And he also plays the most minutes per game of his career, almost 32. Are we going to call him Tony Stark at some point? Sorry, Adamares, I know you.
Well, he's got the gear, right? On the boot, at least on the one side. I hadn't thought about it this way until you brought up the contract, but I can't think of any other team in the league that would have Mike in on a max contract that wouldn't be thinking of him as their number one or their number two, right? And it takes so much pressure off of him to be on this deal and be able to alleviate for us the way that he does. But I think in return has given him an opportunity to grow into this game where with all he's gone through physically, with all he's gone through emotionally, he's not been forced into a situation where he's had to be the guy, where he's had to come back too soon, where he's had to be any of those things. And so, I think it's amazing how this has worked out for he and the Nuggets both in the long run that way.
Yeah, I agree. It's just wonderful. I always say how impressed I am. I am with his, family upbringing. Like, he's so about the right stuff, and I give my flowers to his parents first and foremost. It's just amazing. He completely won me over. I was a skeptic once. I admit that. I was always a skeptic on the guys that don't have the full, length of basketball moves and stuff they should know about basketball. But he has filled in so nicely during his tenure on the Nuggets, and we can really speak about him as a super specialist. Let's call him like that. He's still a specialist, but he's a super specialist, and there's not a lot of those on the market. Awesome. So, yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Okay, let's do one more story for this segment, and this one is called Christian Brown's sophomore struggles and turnaround. So it is a roller coaster. Let's hear it.
I mean, not everybody. A lot of guys go through second year struggles, especially when, folks start to figure them out and put them in positions that they were not in those rookie seasons, when they were doing things that were unexpected because nobody had scouted them, basically. And I think Christian was being put into a lot of those situations in the early part of this season, and found himself struggling both in terms of what teams were forcing him to do, but also seemed like maybe he was pushing himself in directions that weren't necessarily his strengths. It just feels so much. And Coach was talking about this last night because it was one of the questions post game, talking about Christian and how he's progressing. And I think he said a lot of it really thoughtfully from the perspective of, I think Christian's just getting back to what made him strongest. But you also saw last night, a lot of times early this season, the guy charges to the basket, and he was taking a lot of charges early on in the season because of how people had scouted him from last season and how he was doing that. He's got a nice little Euro something. He's starting to work out a little bit, and in these last few games has found his way to the hoop on some of those, three guys charging up to the rim, and he's threading a needle to get the ball up and into the rim. His three looked a lot more solid the other night. I think he was
3 of 3.
4 for 4, 3 for 3.
3 for 3, yeah.
Is that it? Yeah. So, I mean, he's
5 of 5 in total.
Is that it? Okay, perfect. Thank you. He's heating up at the right time, but I also feel like he has addressed all of this situationally faster than a lot of guys do in that second season, and thank goodness, really good timing for us coming into the playoffs.
Exactly. So there's this thing that the NBA has and no other league does, and it's the huge number of regular season games that allows teams to have huge budgets and therefore to share the pool of vast majority of world's best players. But on the flip side, this causes almost all the NBA players getting used to losing games very often. Like 20-ish teams really competes every year, and that is why even the best teams end up with 20 or more losses before the playoffs. This is why once great winners like Bogdan Bogdanovic or Luka Doncic, just to name a few dominant European MVPs, are forced to get a pat on the back much more often than what they ever did before. Luckily, this is not the case for Christian Brown, a 2-times NCAA champion that became the NBA champion. How important is it, in your opinion, to have a guy of such pedigree on your team?
I think, before his championship at Kansas, I think there are high school and even youth, national youth championships.
Yeah.
That precede him as well. There are habits that are bred in doing all of that I think are very important ones to hang on to and to keep. And I think more than anything, there's no replacing a high pressure situation, whether that's a high pressure situation for an 11-year-old or a 17-year-old or a 24-year-old. I think every time you go you run through that fire, you come out a little bit more refined, right? So,
yeah. So Christian has a much bigger role this season, as you mentioned. He shoots a lot more, and with that volume, his percentage is plummeted. But it is comforting that his free throw percentage is better than his rookie season. You always want to see stuff like that. So all of his per 36 counting numbers improved, except for the steals, which slid from 1.2 to 0.9 per 36. Do you think his bigger load on offense is what caused his early struggles on defense?
That's a good question. I think that's a part of it. I could see it just as easily being the, you know, we talked about Peyton and how he might end up being the Bruce replacement. Nobody was talking about Peyton as the Bruce replacement at the beginning of the year. Everybody was saying it was Christian, right? And so I think I wouldn't be at all surprised, especially with all he has shouldered in his past, if Christian didn't try to bite off a little more than he could chew at the beginning of the year, just saying, now I am this guy. And I don't think he was quite ready for that just yet. And he seems to have course corrected pretty nicely.
Okay, we have to interrupt the show right now because we got a huge super chat from RP43. It's 140 Canadian dollars. So Miroslav's news was more anticipated than LeBron's. The decision, enjoy Colorado, Miroslav Brate. Thank you. Thank you so much for your support. It really means a lot. It's an expensive venture. Definitely so, though. So these things are gonna help hugely. Okay, let's take one more short break, and then we'll slide through a couple of more stories before the end. Don't go anywhere. Okay, next story. KCP's all defense season. So Nuggets' fifth starter fortunately gets much more flowers than the fifth guy from the Beatles, right? So Mike Cook.
All I'm saying is that I don't know that they could have hung a more perfect carrot out in front of KCP this year than saying, hey, we think you deserve and we think you should go for that first team all defense. He is playing out of his mind all season long. What a spectacular season he's having this year. I hope somebody's keeping count of how many defensive player of the game chains he has hung this year around his neck. I have a feeling it's more than half the games we've played, and he's just having just the numbers are even bearing it out. But you watch those moments at the end of games where whoever's hot on the other team is still just starting to light it up a little bit, and especially if it's somebody of Kentavious size, he just shuts it down time after time.
Yeah, especially in fourth quarters. I mean, it's no coincidence the Nuggets are so amazing in the clutch. It's just that, yes, they have a perfect offense, but you need a lot of stops to get, you know, big net rating in the clutch. And definitely KCP is one of the guys most responsible for that part. So akin to Christian Brown, a champion, it was so important to get a guy everybody hates to play against, a true pest outside, yeah, on both sides of the court. You can easily see he has so much more he could show on offense, but he isn't Jeremy Grant. He wants championships, and he already has two. So Kenny Pope's role is actually slightly smaller than last season. All of his numbers are ever so slightly lower this season, even without Bruce Brown. And I think that's encouraging, since that means that young guys got the proper chance, and results tell us that was a successful transition so far, don't you think?
I think that makes sense, and I think it also means that in a lot of ways, I feel like we've had a lot more games this season as well in which we have played a strong enough game that we've been able to play more of the reserves, that there have been an awful lot of fourth quarters that we've been able to bring the bench in, bring even the tertiary players in, and give them more time. And so, let's save those minutes and that gasoline for when it all matters here in about 20 games.
I agree. Yeah. We have, I believe, three more stories, so I might go a bit faster on those.
Please,
So the next one is, what has been to be like? What has been like to be the champs all season, opponent-wise? Now, this is something you've seen many times in different sports. So, without a further ado,
I think the biggest surprise to me out of all of that, and maybe it's just naive to feel that way, the lower tier teams that come in just swinging from their toes, basically, because we're the measuring stick for everybody now this season, right? And so even the teams that they've only got 9 wins, they're still, you're getting everything Detroit has tonight, basically, right? And it just, while that's something that you can discuss, 64 games into a season, it's a very different emotion. It's you're running a gauntlet. It's crazy. It's different to experience it than to talk about it, for sure.
So I plan on calling Sam Esfandiari, a brilliant podcaster and a pioneer among online live shows who covers the Golden State Warriors, but I want to wait for the second championship before asking him what to expect when covering a full-grown dynasty. So my question to you is, how you can recognize when the team is struggling versus when they just don't care because they know they have what it takes to win again?
Good grief. I think it shows pretty easily when they're not putting forth the effort. Last night's third quarter comes to mind, right? There's a big difference in how this team looks when they're just not committed to playing ball the right way. And I think that's true of anybody. That's another thing Malone said last night. You know, these are pros. They're not going to just stop taking shots, stop trying hard. So it seems pretty self-evident that way. And I think, what about for you?
I think you're right. And it's kind of it's like, if we believe nothing is wrong ever, and every time they play bad, we can say, yeah, they're just, I think this is what Golden State Warriors fans have been doing for like, how many, 6-7 years now? Like, yeah, they had people don't remember this outside of Golden State, but they won championships and then they were in the lottery. There wasn't any middle ground there. Like, they got some really good players because they had high picks in the lottery. You know, Steph get injured, Clay gets injured, and they got high draft picks, and they almost pulled that off, but they really messed up their draft picks.
Well, they also hit that once-in-a-lifetime salary cap bubble that allowed Durant to come in for a hot second. So they nailed it, man. They really did.
I really loved the I really loved the Warriors before they brought Durant, and then I hated them so bad. And I often think about, would I hate the Nuggets if they would do something like that? Like, you know, bring in Giannis or Luka or somebody like that. Would I just say, F that, man, I don't want to see that? But on the other hand, it's kind of a nice place to be when everybody hates you. Like, if you're not good, you're not going to get a lot of enemies, right?
I'd grown up with the Lakers as a kid, and while I was already falling away during the Shaq and Kobe era, when they finally brought in Peyton and Malone, That was it for me, man. That was the Death Star. All of a sudden, I hated those guys. So I get you.
We have a good comment from the boy's dad about Michael Malone, and that's a perfect intro for the next story that is called Malone 3.0. Now, this is going to be great. I can sense it. Please take us for a spin with it.
I felt, especially after the end of that first season, Malone was pretty self-critical of himself after the first year with Denver, in how much he recognized that his emotions tended to drag, especially a young team, along with him. When he got very upset, when he got very hot about things, or even over emotionally happy about what had happened, he saw that he was taking those kids through those highs and lows as well. And was something that he called out on himself. And I felt like he tried really hard to change himself. And I kind of always thought of that as Malone 2.0, you know, in a lot of those ways. But that was still the guy that did a lot of things, like in those early years, was still doing a lot of platooning, you know, was still going by a book, didn't play a lot of rookie minutes or youth minutes if he could avoid it, basically. He very much had sort of a pre-programmed idea of his approach. And I think this is a lot of what I was talking about with Joker up top too. I think that ring has definitely kind of taken the shackles off for him that way, in terms of he seems to coach much more from his gut, be much more free flowing in how he makes not only his substitutions, but you can see an angry Malone timeout even 15 seconds into the second half, just coming from a mile off now, right? You know when it's coming, and he's going to give those guys hell, and they're going to come back out and course correct. They've worked out a really solid scheme for them with him.
So I just believe that Michael Malone talks to Nikola Jokic about all things Nuggets much more than people would imagine. I think Nikola loves the fact that Malone is so old school, and not everybody likes that. Jeremy Grant, Bones Highland, sorry about that. I must have catched the cold on the mountains earlier today. The Nuggets' half-court offense always start the same, and they probably have the same number of main actions as all the other NBA teams. But the amount of counters and solves they have for everybody should probably be credited in equal parts to Michael Malone and coaching seminars junkie Nikola Jokic. I believe our coach is perfect both in being a great caters to stars guy, and you need to have that to survive in the NBA, but also in being a guy with enough authority to ride his guys across the roster so he can take them to their goals. What do you think?
I love that. It's funny you... That cough, Jeremy Grant. Who do you think's got bigger regrets now, Jeremy Grant or Bones Highland? For not being able to be a Malone guy, basically.
Oh, Bones Highland didn't make any real money so far. Yeah, it's rough. It's really rough. What he's facing. He might still get better, but I don't know. Jeremy at least got his bag.
That's fair. And Jeremy is a good player with a good coach now. I think a lot of Chauncey, but I think you're right. I think that's a great way to look at it. Malone is a very specific sort of a guy, and I think you've got to be willing to. People laughed when he said we were going to be a defensive team that first season. When he came on as coach and he said we were going to be a defensive team, there was an audible ripple of laughter that ran through that room. And now, even though you could still argue maybe Jamal and Nikola are the weakest defensive spots on the team, neither of them are a weak defender. They're both plus solid defenders. It's just that then the guys you name after them are ridiculous defenders, right? I mean, even Mike now, just because of his length and his hops and all of the rest, Aaron, KCP, Peyton, Christian, just defensive juggernauts. It's a Malone team. It's a Malone style team all the way.
Yeah, I agree about the defense part. People talk too much about the one-on-one defense because that's such a small part of basketball. Defense is about the team. And it's so funny to me when you have everybody, you know, making fun of Nikola as a defensive guy, when he had Jamal and Gary Harris like small guys in front of him, or even worse, when he had Facu Campazzo and Austin Rivers in front of him. And yeah, you see, Nikola doesn't play defense. And then you do the same thing to Joel Embiid. You remove Ben Simmons from the team.
It's 5-on-1.
Suddenly this defense is not so exciting as it used to be. So it's so funny. I just have to tell you, Mike Malone has a really high approval rating in Serbia because he's such a intense guy. People here love that about him. And there was this rumor that he was supposed to become, you know, the assistant to the coach of Serbia national team several years ago. It was in the time of Igor Kokoschko, if I remember correctly. Yeah. And everybody was so positive about it because, yeah, he's an American guy, but he's our guy. We get him. So yeah, Michael Malone, of course, like every other NBA coach, has his weaknesses, of course. But his strengths overshadow those so hard. And he's, as I said, he's just such a perfect complement to his team. And, you know, people joked about him saying that his team is going to be a defensive team. Well, he only needed 8 years to make it work. So the moral of the story, get your coach 8-year chance and you'll get there.
Just all you need is that 8-year contract and you're good to go. That's yeah. Perfect.
8-year cushion and, you know, who is impatient in the NBA? Come on. It's okay. Okay. Last story for today, and might be my favorite one, is called How Much I Deeply Despise the 52-80 Jerseys. So my story would have been how much I hate the fact that teams have more than two jerseys in a single season, but that's just European perspective. What is your issue with the highly non-metric number on the jerseys?
It's not necessarily the 52-80. I love that we're calling that out. I love that we've got it on the court, actually right in front of the free throw line. I think that's the perfect spot for somebody as they're looking down and dribbling to be thinking about how gassed they are, basically. And you see player after player talk about how much that stuff gets in their head. So I think that's great. I describe them as the 52-80 uniforms because that's they're just so ugly. It's they're the three primary colors. It's literally like we gave a four-year-old an opportunity to take a swing at this. The blue is still very visible above the black. The numbers are the same size on the 52-80 as they are for the player numbers. I don't know. I only dabble in design, not the way D-Line is great at it, but wow. Feels like somebody got their very first try at building a jersey and and somebody accepted it. So that's rough.
I have no opinions on that, honestly, because I just don't understand colors that well. It's just for me, like, the Nuggets are a blue team, and let's not make them red. Or, I mean, I guess they're also yellow. That works too. Give them blue, yellow, and white. And why do we need the black jerseys? I mean, I know they did look cool. I have to say that, but it's not the Nuggets colors. Come on, guys. Like, you can do the different shades of blue, I guess. I don't know.
When we I didn't like last year's third jersey, the one that just said Denver on it. And that's the one that we won every important game of the playoffs in. So now every memory through history is going to be in that butt ugly thing as well. So sorry for that.
Yeah, it is what it is. Okay. So that's all for this show. Everybody go check out Mike's latest piece on the Avs on the ddnvr.com. By the way, the Avs are my second favorite Colorado team, not because they're awesome, but because hockey is the only other American pro sport I understand and like. So
also an 82-game season, just the same. Very
similar calendar as well.
Yeah, exactly. Maybe you'll get to see some of that at the bar too.
Yeah, we've seen him attending the games, and I totally understand. I know he also attended some Rockies games before as well. So that's cool. That's really nice. I haven't seen him on Broncos games, but it is what it is. I guess that's that kind of era for the Broncos. By the way, you know everything about Colorado sports. What is this thing about Broncos trading away all of their good guys? Like, is it because you get, you know, you get something in return when you give out your good guys? you get a possible award in the future?
I have some strong opinions in there, and as a Broncos fan, a lot of those opinions contain some four-letter words. But but I think the term fire sale comes to mind. And I think at this moment they are conceding that this is not going to be their moment. So how can they most successfully rebuild with the pieces they have? Whether they do that or not remains to be seen.
Yeah, we're having a fire sale.
Yeah, exactly.
All right. That's all for this show. As I said, I will see you again next weekend. Don't forget to smash that like button on your way out. So until next time. Oh, let me just give another shout out to our super chatters, Patrick and RP43. You guys rock. So until next time, Jakar Sampson.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.